Welcome to the Annie Jennings PR PokerCast, a poker how-to podcast series featuring the greatest and most accomplished poker players in the industry. Our honored guest poker pro today is Lou Krieger. Lou is the author of numerous books on poker, including Poker for Dummies, Internet Poker, How to Play and Beat the Online Poker Games, The Poker Player's Bible, and of course the book that we've been talking about and is one of our featured books today, Secrets the Pros Won't Tell You About Winning Hold'em Poker, written with co-author Sherry Bykofsky. Welcome, Lou, to the Annie Jennings PR PokerCast.
Well, I'm glad to be back.
We're happy to have you back. You are off the charts. Your podcasts are off the charts. Everyone loves you, Lou. Yeah, that's true.
It's nice to be loved. So,
isn't it a good feeling? Yes, they love your work, and I know you've written many, many books, and I encourage everyone to check them all out. You can go to Annie Jennings PR PokerCast.com and click on our store, and hey, feel free, have a shopping spree. I know I own probably every poker book ever written. So here we go. Lou, I have a question for you. The excitement is building around this year's World Series of Poker. This, as you know, it starts in June. It's in Las Vegas, it's at the Rio, and to many this is known as the WSOP, of course. This is a mega tournament. Now, record numbers last year we had, somewhere over 8,000 players. I am wondering, do you expect there to be even more this year?
Well, last year there were 8,773 players in the main event.
Wow.
Now, I expect that there are going to be fewer players this year, and for a number of reasons. And none of the reasons are that poker is shrinking in popularity. Quite the opposite. It is increasing. However, last year, many of the online poker sites, like PokerStars, Party Poker, Full Tilt, etc., ran online satellite tournaments where for a small buy-in, talking $30, $40, $50 or so, players could win an entry into the $10,000 no-limit hold'em tournament, the main event at the World Series of Poker. And the site would buy the player in, and all the player had to do was show up. He'd get his airfare as part of this package, too, and play. Now, with the passage of the Unlawful Internet Gaming Enforcement Act in October, a number of the online sites have stopped doing business with poker players from the United States, and those that have are no longer going to be permitted to buy in directly other players. So now, if you win a satellite on PokerStars, what PokerStars will have to do is somehow give the money to you, the winning player, and hope that you actually buy into the tournament. Now,
mm-hmm.
It's one thing for someone to win a package,
right,
that says, hey, show up in Las Vegas and you know, your buy-in is taken care of, you got a hotel room, and
sure, they never have the money in their hands, right?
Some spending money and your airfare. But now they get, say, $12,000 or $13,000 in
cash.
They go home and say, hey, honey, look, I just got $13,000. I'm going to take this to play in a poker tournament.
I know. And wifey's going to put her foot down. Absolutely. There's going to be other...
Hell, you are.
Yes. There's kids.
Refinishing the kitchen.
There's not only that. There's kids. There's college. There's summer camps. You name it, $10,000 can be spent very quickly.
Yeah, when
on
you
the necessities of life.
When you put $10,000 in someone's hand, it's no longer a poker chip anymore. It's real money in the real world.
Money. You're right.
And real world demands step up to the plate and say, hey, we're first. So I think that's one reason. There's another reason, too, and in the... in the old days, 3-4 years ago, when somebody had a poker tournament on a given day or a given series of dates, it was sort of a gentleman's agreement that another casino would not step up and schedule a competing tournament at the same time. Now, if you had a tournament where the minimum buy-in was $1,000 for event and maybe it went up to a couple of $10,000 events, and another casino halfway across the country was having a tournament with $100 buy-in, that's not real competition. But what you have now is direct competition against the World Series of Poker. So the World Series of Poker is running from June 1st through mid-July. With 55 events, a variety of all different variants of poker. Now, during that same time, I think starting on about June 10th and running through mid-July, the Bellagio is having a series of buy-ins that are of similar price to the World Series. All of them are no-limit Texas Hold'em. So if you're at the Rio and there's a stud tournament that day as part of the World Series of Poker, and you don't like anything about seven-card stud, the Bellagio is hoping you'll run right over there and play in a no-limit Texas Hold'em tournament. Not only that, basically across the street from the Bellagio, the Venetian is having its, I think it's called Deep Stack Extravaganza 2, and that's a fairly expensive, sort of pricey buy-in tournament, and that's taking place at the same time. Downtown Binion's is having a lower buy-in series of tournaments. So if you run through your bankroll too quickly at the World Series of Poker or take a big hit in the cash game but you still want to play in tournaments while you're in Vegas, there's a month's worth of tournaments at Binion's. So there's a lot of competition for the tournament dollar all over Las Vegas. It's essentially going to be a feeding frenzy of poker for about a month and a half, and the other casinos are not just sitting back and saying, okay, Harris, you have all the action for the next 45 days. They're saying, we want our share. We want a bite of this, and that's exactly what they're doing.
All right, terrific. So it's interesting to see the changes that are taking place, isn't it?
Yeah, it really is. Not only that, there are so many changes that it's hard to look at prior year experiences and extrapolate them into this year because the situation is very different. For instance, this year the World Series of Poker has grown to 55 events, which sounds like a lot. It sounds like a huge number of events, but in reality, there's no way that even if you had the bankroll, you could play in all 55. During the first, I think, 11 or 12 days at the World Series of Poker, there's an event that begins at noon, and there's another event that begins at 5 o'clock. Now, the only way, if you enter the noon event, that you can play in the 5 o'clock event is that if you're knocked out of the noon event fairly early. So while there are 55 events to be played in, it's not possible at all that any player can play in all 55. So on one hand, it's much bigger than it's ever been.
Right.
On another hand, it isn't so much bigger because when you have 55 events squeezed into 45 days,
right.
2 weeks of which are taken up by the main event, it's real difficult to do that. So nobody is going to play in all 55 events. Probably very few people are going to play in more than half the events.
Right. Now, question for you. Back in 2005, they had a little over 5,000 players, and then, of course, we experienced that again, record growth. So it's growing by leaps and bounds. But you're mentioning this year sort of the underlying factors that really push those numbers up no longer exist. Do you want to give us a ballpark? Because the next part of our podcasting recording here, I'm going to ask you to start to talk a little bit about playing a major tournament strategy. I'd like to get your guesstimate on what do you think the field is going to be for the main event?
Oh boy, you know, everybody is guessing and everybody's been asking me to take a guess, and I've been asking other people to take a guess.
Well, oh gosh,
I will give you a number, and then I'll tell you I don't have a whole lot of faith in it.
Okay.
I would say 4,500.
Really? That's almost about a 50% decline. So, you know what? I think that's good news for the players, and here's why. People who really play that event, I mean, they want to win. And we're going to be talking today about how to win, Lou. So I like the idea. Of course, the prize pool goes down as well. I mean, last year we saw they actually paid 873rd place, and that finisher received $14,000. So that's quite a few. That's a large percentage being paid out. However, And most great players can probably make it that high, you know, barring any unusual events. But, so 4,500.
That's not a true statement.
Oh, because I wanted to talk to you, right, about good players being blown out early and, how to actually reach the money. You know? Now, do you want to hold on to that thought? And we'll go back
to
it.
I will hold on to that thought. And I think, if you look at the growth of the World Series of Poker from when it started until now, in 1997, for the first time since it began in 1970, they had more than 300 players. Now, with the growth of online poker, 2003 marked a watershed event. They had 800 some odd players. and it was
so
a lot of were the internet players, and Chris Moneymaker won. You know, poker started, really two things came together at once. One was internet poker making it, you know, it's one thing to reach into your pocket and pull out $10,000 and say, you know, deal me in. It's a different story entirely when you just take out $25 or $50 and buy into a satellite and
win.
And then you can play. So the internet, in essence, the online satellite tournaments really democratized the World Series of Poker and made it affordable to the masses of lower limit players.
I know, which is a key secret to success for any business.
And it grew from 800 to 2,000 something to 8,000 last year. It was just a curve that was shooting straight upward like a rocket.
Yes, exactly, and it lured in a lot of major sponsors, too.
Yeah, it lured in sponsors. Every online poker site worldwide was sending players to the World Series of Poker, and they don't even care. You know, it would be great if their player won, but as long as their player makes it to a table that's televised,
that's fine
with them.
Sure, because they're going to be wearing their hats or their logos.
Their hat, they're wearing their shirt, you know, whatever. So it was it became like the Tour de France or NASCAR. We have sponsors' names all over.
Well, question for you now. For those lucky players that either do still satellite in, or the ones that do dig down and they really want to play and they want to put their money on the table, I want to ask you some strategies now. We're going to do two interviews. This first one is just going to be our major tournament poker's pointers for success. I'm going to ask you questions about the atmosphere and how to deal with the unexpected, et cetera. And our next recording is following right this one. We'll talk about really how to win, the actual tournament strategy. So the first thing I'd like to ask you is that we know there are tournaments for about 6 weeks, as you just mentioned, leading up to the main event. And are you feeling that players who seriously take poker now, they want to win, should arrive a few weeks early and start playing, sort of warming up so that they get there, they get into their groove, they're hot by the time they sit down at the main event, not cold, and they're just ready to go, and they've worked out their kinks and whatever else happens when you find yourself in Las Vegas playing the World Series of Poker?
Well, I don't think you need to get there 2 weeks ahead of time. It's not like you're a professional football player, you're a quarterback, and you got to get your timing down with your receivers, and the only way to do that is to throw them a lot of passes over a long period of time. Let's look at a couple of different examples, because I think it's different for different kinds of players. If you've been coming to the World Series every year, if you live in Las Vegas, if you're a frequent visitor to Las Vegas, I don't think you have to get there too far in advance. because you have a sense of what Las Vegas is like. You have a sense of what the World Series of Poker is all about. You have a sense of the tournament room and the tables and the chairs and how everything works. So you can pull in a day or two early. You can get over there and get signed up. You can schmooze with your friends, and you're ready to go on day one. If you've never been to Las Vegas before, if you live in, someplace where the biggest casino you've ever been in has 10 or 15 poker tables, then I would say it would pay to get there 3 or 4 days early at least. And go around from place to place, look at the poker rooms, get a feeling for it. There'll be nothing going on at the Rio before the tournament starts, so there's no sense going over there. The poker room will just be an empty, a massive room in a convention center before the tournament starts.
Almost like the calm before the storm.
Almost like the calm before the storm, exactly.
It'd be great for a photojournalist to just note that, you know, to get the calm before the storm and then take some pictures as things are going on.
I think it would help for any player who's never been to Las Vegas before to get there a few days early and go to some other casino, go to the Bellagio or the Mirage or the Wynn or any place where they have a decent-sized poker room and spend a couple hours playing poker. Just get a feeling for it. You'll run into other players who are in town early for the World Series of Poker, and you'll talk to them. They'll be at your table. And in just casual conversation, they will humanize themselves to you, and they won't all look as though they're just incredibly skillful opponents with no chance.
Right? You do expect it. Like, it's funny because you're talking about that crisis of confidence that people might experience. But it can happen, right? Even if you're a really fabulous player, have you ever arrived at a game thinking, wait a minute, am I good? What do you think?
You have that all the time. And I think you have that in... it's not only in poker, in other things too. I remember when I was a kid in high school and I was on the basketball team, and they had the city championship playoffs in New York City in Madison Square Garden. So for a 16-year-old kid, you know, Madison Square Garden is like Mecca. You know,
the New York Knicks
play there, and you know, you're used to playing in some ratty high school gym that, that seats about 200 people, and you go there, and there are kids there from all high schools, and they're playing 10 games a day, and you think, geez, all these other teams, you know, every other player is just great. In reality, they're 16-year-old kids like you are, so it isn't until you play for 5 minutes that you start to feel like this is just another basketball game.
Right, but initially, but see, that's a mindset. I wanted to talk to you about the tournament mindset, the mental training. But first let me ask you a question about just a little description of the atmosphere. All of a sudden you're going to have thousands of players arriving. I know they have a day one, day two, and a day three this year, but at a certain point the place is going to be absolutely packed with players. Would you like to tell us a little bit about what the players can expect in atmosphere, what their day is going to be like? Will it be
Thrilling? It's bedlam. You walk in there and it's like Grand Central Station or...
Yeah.
An airport the weekend before Thanksgiving.
Exactly, the busiest day of the year.
People are just running all over, wall-to-wall people.
Mm-hmm.
You have no idea what it's like to walk into a room that has 200 poker tables. That's 2,000 players sitting at the table. There's also a load of other people and media walking through the aisles. There are photographers. There are screens that show what event is going on, how much time left in this round, and it's ultimately just a deafening roar emotionally as well as mentally. However, when push comes to shove, you don't have to worry about those 2,000 other players. You have to worry about the players that are at your table. And if you can mentally put a wall around your table. The only ones you have to worry about are the people you're playing against.
See, I like what you're saying now. I mean, you are, of course, a very skilled player. You've won many amounts of games and tournaments in your day. And whenever you play, you definitely are a contender. You mentioned something about a wall around your table. You probably just gave us an amazing strategy to use to allow for concentration at the game at hand, right?
So well,
people,
you know,
yeah.
You're right, Annie. But think about it. If there are 2,000 players in the room and you look at them all, your initial thought is, oh, my God, I've got to
get out of here.
I've got to beat 2,000 other players.
Forget it. How can I go up against 2,000 other players? This is insanity.
I've got to beat 2,000 other players. Well,
what
you don't
were
have
they
to
thinking?
Beat 2,000 other players. Most of the others will get beaten by other players. People are going to be eliminated.
Sure.
The vast majority of players in that room with you, you will never compete against.
Will
never be at your table. They will be eliminated, or you will be eliminated, but they will be, shipped passing in the night.
So I want to talk to you now. Let's talk about how just to get ready in terms of this. I mean, I wanted to ask you about if a player's tired, but basically the initial thing is how do they play, what kind of mindset should they go in with? Seriously, like one table at a time, one player at a time. I mean, how are you going to deal with these 2,000 players surrounding you? They're there.
Well, that's the old football coach statement. When they ask them whether they think they can go on and win the Super Bowl, they say, well, we're just going to play one game at a time. And in reality, you just have to play one hand at a time.
Right. You can't calm down, right?
You can't worry about things that you have no control over. You might see that somebody 10 tables over at one point on day one has, $60,000 in chips and all you have is $15,000.
Right, that could freak you out a little.
How did he get so many? You know, he might have gotten the great run of cards. He might have gotten really lucky.
Mm-hmm.
He obviously got lucky at the right time because he had hands he was willing to go all in with and he found somebody willing to dance with him.
At that early
It doesn't do any good if you have four aces and nobody's willing to play with you.
Nobody wants to play with you, yes.
So, that's how come that guy has that kind of money that early in the tournament.
So we're going to keep it simple. He took the risk. He had a great run of cards, but also took the risk.
He had a great run of cards.
Not everybody's going to want to take that kind of risk early on, right? We're going to talk about that later.
That's true, and also you might not have had a great run of cards.
Which is very
true. Making minimal raises with small hands and nobody calls, and so you win a small pot. It's okay. You can't win the World Series of Poker on the first day. You can lose it, and approximately half the people are going to be eliminated on day one.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
So
right now we're identifying some strategies. You're going to telling people to relax, build a wall, put a little mental barrier, a wall around your table, focus on your table.
Relax is important. You have to make the game slow down for you.
Slow down for you, because I want to also say that it's very different from online poker, but we're going to get to that later. And one important thing you said is just to look at it as, I'm going to go to play my best game one hand at a time.
You're going to play your best game one hand at a time.
Slow time down.
You're also going to think long and hard about committing all your chips to the pot when your whole tournament life is online.
Now, I love the way you're saying that, because one thing the online players do, and you know this if you've ever played online, it's very easy. There's tournaments all over the place. The buy-ins aren't that big. It's call, raise, re-raise, all in, call. You can't do that in real life tournament play, can you?
Well, you're not going to find it at the World Series of Poker. You may find some players whose strategy is to either go all in or not play a hand.
Or go home. One or the other is going to happen.
Well, look, that strategy of going all in is going to win a lot of pots.
Uh-huh.
It's going to win every one but the last one.
Right, exactly. It's like, where do you find your keys? In the last place you look.
eventually you're going to go all in.
And somebody's going to come up.
And somebody's going to wake up with a pocket pair of aces,
mm-hmm.
or
say, hey.
Go all in on the flop, and somebody will flop the set.
Or they're just lose their patience with you and say, that's it, I'm not doing this anymore.
All of those mm-hmm. chips that you've acquired are going to be shipped over to somebody else. So
ship the chips.
You really, I think, on the first day or two, more than anything else, you want to survive.
You want to survive. Now, again, we're going to come back with the tournament strategies on how to win this thing. I wanted to ask you about how players can mentally prepare, such as, are you thinking any physical training, mental training? We want people to be ready where they can be ready, because one thing I know is that the unexpected does happen. And when it happens, that's going to be plenty for you to deal with. So what's the expected that players can anticipate, and can you train yourself a bit before playing this big deal thing?
A lot of players will tell you that in an event like the main event at the World Series, younger players have a huge edge simply because of stamina.
That's right.
This is a marathon. It is not a sprint.
Think about that now.
Well, a lot of the online tournaments that you play are sprints, you know?
There, and some of the longer ones can be 6 to 8 hours, but I'll tell you what, players find those fairly grueling. Now you're talking about 12.
Now you're talking about 12 hours, and you're talking about 12 hours for 2 weeks.
That's right. So I just don't get it. I've got a question for you. This is just I was thinking, why don't they just, you know, break this in half and have two World Series? So everyone will make a lot more money. But anyway, that's just an idea for them down the road.
And I think what happens is let me draw an analogy. You're on a long car trip, and you leave from Los Angeles, and at some point you see a sign in the road that says Salt Lake City, 40 miles.
Yeah.
Okay.
You perk
and
up
next,
a bit.
The next thing you know,
mm-hmm.
you see another sign that says, thank you for visiting Salt Lake City. See you next time. So, you know, you have that highway hypnosis. You've been driving on literally autopilot, and 40, 50 miles have gone by where you're not really cognizant. Nothing about those 40 or 50 miles that went into your head stayed there.
Yeah, and there is a time lapse, too. It's odd. When you're driving a long distance, all of a sudden time seems to, you experience time differently.
I think that happens in a long poker tournament. You'll be playing and playing. You know, look, most hands are fairly automatic. You know, it's an automatic hand to raise with. It's an automatic hand to fold. There's not much thinking. And you get into this autopilot way of playing, and that's when you're susceptible to making mistakes in judgment, because you're not thinking through each hand. As a result, you're not seeing the danger.
See, I can you do me a favor and repeat that, because I think what you just said is extremely valuable to the players. We want you to win, guys. My listeners, I want you to win. And if you do, I hope you definitely tell me. But Lou, why don't you tell us again about how to keep your focus?
Well, it's important to keep your focus, and I think that there's a terrific tendency when you're in a marathon event and it's grueling, and it's one hand after another, hour after hour, day after day, that you need to keep your antenna up to see the dangers in the road, to see the potholes, to see the landmines that it's possible to stumble over. And often when you don't see them, that's when you do stumble and fall, and before you know it, somebody is putting you all in, and
mm-hmm.
you're with either losing half of your chips without even seeing the next card, or committing all of your chips when you're probably not a favorite. So it's really critical to do that. Is there a miracle way to keep people alert every second? I don't know that there is one. I think humans have a natural tendency to
have a biorhythm.
To take things and group them together and mm-hmm. box them up and deal with them in that way, because it's easier in human experience to deal with things as groups and sets rather than seeing thing is new for the first time over and over and over
right.
and over again. But that's not such a good idea in a poker tournament. Now, how do you get to that point where you're always alert? I don't know that you will be always alert. I do think what you have to do is, even on the hands that are no-brainers, you know, you're sitting there, you're dealt 8-3, somebody raises, somebody re-raises, and now it gets around to you. You know you're gonna fold. It's an automatic fold. I think what you should do is pause 3 or 4 or 5 seconds, and then fold. And if you train yourself to pause on each hand as you act on it, then in the process you'll give yourself time to think about those hands that are important and that are critical decisions for your tournament life.
Right. Okay, that's very good. Now, I've got a question for you. There's a couple more questions in this particular interview series, and then, of course, we're going to be back with Lou Krieger for our part two of this little series on winning tournament strategy, how to win the big one. So you'll be back the next podcast, which will take place in just a few minutes, but now I got a question for you. What happens if you find a well-known poker player at your table, for example? What mental shift should you make where just the mere presence of a poker legend, such as Doyle Brunson, being seated at your table, putting you on tilt? And I say that humorously because, you know, we know that tilt is when you're not playing your best game for whatever reason, but a big personality like that, I mean, just the sight of him, you know, that can change your state of winning mind. So can you give us some advice on what happens when you're, like, with the big guy at your table and, like, they're playing a hand and they want to draw you in? I mean, how do you deal with sitting across from some of the greatest players in the entire history of poker?
Well, that's a terrific question, and I think the first thing you want to do is you want to thank your lucky stars that you're playing poker against the best poker player in the world, and not finding yourself stepping up to the plate and having to face Randy Johnson throwing a 97-mile-an-hour fastball up and under your chin. You know, there are places where you have no chance against the best in the world. For instance, I don't know anyone who's going to get into the into a ring with a world champion boxer, or even a mediocre boxer. I mean, you'll be carried out in a stretcher inside of a minute. There's no two ways about it. But you can beat Doyle Brunson. You're not playing against Doyle Brunson. You're playing against the entire table. Now, if you're playing against Doyle Brunson, you know that he's a good player. You know that he is selective and he is aggressive. You know that he is a lot more likely to lay his hand down to a well-timed, propitious bluff than some horrible player who's a maniac and takes it as a personal blow to his ego that you've bet into him and will never lay his hand down. So,
good point.
I think what you should do is say, wow, I'm lucky I'm not playing Doyle Brunson for the next year. Heads up, me and him, and that's it. Because if that were the case, he would bury you. But you're playing for a short period of time against Doyle Brunson as one of nine opponents at the table. So
it's
I wouldn't worry
moment,
too much about
it. It's a moment in history. And again, in our next teleseminar or our next podcast, I'm going to ask you a question about how do you determine the strength of the player so you know if they're one of those people who can't lay their hand down, the maniacs, et cetera. But for now, question for you. Etiquette, dealing with the annoying player, the harassing player, the player that demeans your style of player, laughs at your call, calls you a donkey, whatever. So player etiquette, what is the professional and expected behavior at the tables?
Well, you know, it ranges. It ranges all the way across the spectrum from players that are quiet and polite, like Doyle Brunson, to the other side, like Mike the Mouth Matisau, who's always running his mouth and always saying anything that comes into his head to try to throw your game off. I think if you allow someone to throw your game off because of what he says, you have only yourself to blame, because he can say whatever he wants. It's up to you with how you process and deal with that.
Sure. So actually, the advice here is just be ready, because you're going to run into it.
You're going to run into it.
So you've got to be able to process that quickly and get it out of your mind.
My response is I'll talk back to them. I'll talk back to them in double talk.
Tell me about that. How would you handle that? situation where somebody's talking to you, harassing you, annoying you, whatever they're trying to do to get you on major tilt or steam.
Well, if Mike the Mouth said something to me, I'd look at him and say, Mike, how can you say that about the Reeves set the portico to the Krasmus? Well, you mean better than that. My God, what a wincet you must be. And then I'd shut up and see what he says.
And I would say something like, here, Mike, have a cookie.
I mean, I started off doing that in high school. I had a real doofus teacher, and she asked me a question, and I just talked back to her in double talk.
Well, that was hysterical. So we're going to have to learn double talk, everybody. This is really funny.
Everybody has their own stroke.
Oh, gosh. I can't wait. I'm going to be at the World Series of Poker. Please look for me if my players are out there. And you're my players now. Welcome to my community. Anyone listening who shows up, try to seek me out if you can. Annie Jennings. I'd like to interview you, actually. So keep that in mind. So I want my players to do well. All right, so here we go. We're about to wrap. Is there any really important thing that you really want our contenders to know this year as they play the World Series of Poker?
They're not going to believe it, but it's just another poker tournament. And they figure to lose. If there are 5,000 players in that tournament, if you just did it on numbers alone, you figure to win once in every 5,000 times you play, and if you have a 50-year poker playing career, that's once in every 100 lifetimes. Now,
wow. I hate when you talk math.
You are a
kidding.
Great player. Suppose you're a great
mm-hmm.
player. Suppose you have a 10-to-1 edge over anybody else in the field, which nobody does because of the luck factor with the cards. But then you'd only be figure to win one out of every 500 World Series of Pokers, one out of every 10 lifetimes if your poker playing career is 50 years. So if you're better than any player that ever lived, you maybe you're going to win once in 10 lifetimes. So
mm-hmm.
you have to go in there wanting to win. Yet you have to go in there at the realization that you're probably going to fail. Now, that doesn't mean you're not going to cash. 10% of
That's
players
right.
in the field are going to make some money.
Exactly.
They're not going to win it, but they're going to come out feeling good about
and
it.
And we're going to get to bubble strategy next time, too, to make sure you guys do make it to the cash. But meanwhile, I want to thank Lou Krieger. He's the author of many, many poker books, including Secrets the Pros Won't Tell You About Winning Old in Poker, written, of course, with co-author Sherry Bykofsky. You can visit Lou's website at www.loukrieger.com for lots more information. And, of course, you can check out his blog, which is http://loukrieger.blogspot.com. And, of course, let's go back to the Annie Jennings PR PokerCast site.com. Sign up for our email newsletter. We're going to keep you posted with lots of tips. Lou's going to be one of our writers right now, giving us pro strategy and lots more. So there'll be plenty of wonderful things you can do at Annie Jennings PR PokerCast.com. Lou, we'll be back for our next podcast. Thanks for an amazing interview today.
I love being here, Annie, anytime. Thank you very much.
My pleasure. Bye-bye, and all for now.